Are we going to see the world record get broken in the final? Who knows? It really seems lately that the 100 meter freestyle, the faster times are when there's less pressure.
Welcome to Social Kick. I'm Brian Lundquist. We got the full crew. Luke's back from London town, Dr. John Mullen, and legend Brent Hayden. What's going on, Brent? How are you?
I'm doing good. Still waking up. Got my second cup of coffee here. So, so I'm going to be ready to go here.
Well, tell me about the coffee prep. What's your process?
How do you feel about it? So after the London Games, I, you know, retired and, you know, got, you know, with my medal. So I was like, you know, I'm going to treat myself to one little gift. So bought myself a fully automated espresso machine, a De'Longhi Magnifica S. And that thing has been going steady, you know, multiple times every day for, you know, for the last 12 years.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Are you espresso straight up or do you drink like,
oh yeah, I just drink it black, like double espresso in the morning. This is my second double espresso for you guys, making sure I'm awake. I'll have probably another single espresso or two later on in the day, depending on how I feel.
Did you do caffeine before you raced? Because I remember I was telling somebody, a coworker, about this yesterday. Before I raced, I used to drink a Red Bull and take a caffeine pill. And they're like, excuse me?
No, I tried a caffeine pill once. Like, it was recommended to us by, you know, one of our team staff, and it just made me feel super weird, and I didn't race well at all. So for me, my go-to pre-race drink would just be an Americano.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So if I was, like, in, like, a village somewhere heading to the bus, and there was a place to, you know, to stop and grab an espresso, like, I did that in London. They had, like, the little, like, espresso or coffee, like, stands throughout the village. So walk over, grab my espresso or Americano and head straight to the bus.
So Brent, Brian was at a World Cup in Toronto last year, and he went to go get a coffee with Maggie McNeil, who's listening. And he went to Tim Hortons. Oh. Brian, talk about your coffee experience with Maggie at Timmy's.
Well, so I was like recording this thing we're testing like some different formats, and Maggie's a friend of ours on the pod. We've had her on a few times. And so I saw her. She's like, you've never been to Tim Hortons? I have to take you. So she takes me over to Tim Hortons, and we're like going over to Tim Hortons. And then I order a coffee and I took the first sip and I'm like, almost spit it out. It's like so much sugar. And I'm like, all I asked for was a coffee. She goes, oh yeah, like the default, that's the Canadian way, is that you get sugar in it.
Yeah, the default is the double-double. Normally, you have to ask for double-double, but it's a very quintessential Canadian thing to go to Tim Hortons and ask for a double-double. Maggie is quite a bit younger than me, so I don't believe she actually remembers Tim Hortons back when it was actually good, like back when it was actually like Canadian-owned, and, you know, the donuts were fresher, the coffee was fresher. Ever since they got sold to that, you know, huge conglomerate, they've just... Yeah, I avoid Tim Hortons at all costs if I can. It's just not the same. It used to be amazing. It's not the same anymore.
You know, I've long had a question that still stands about when does man strength set in, but I can tell that in your ripe young age that you've crested the threshold of being able to say, in my day,
yeah,
it was better, harder, worse than you could have it.
I wonder when that also happened as well. But now, like, I catch myself saying all the time now, it's like, oh, the kids don't listen to good music these days. And I'm going, oh my God, I sound like my parents. When did this happen?
Well, speaking of that, we had a few, I was asking our audience on Instagram at Social Kick Swim for some rapid fire questions we can ask our guests. So to start us off was, Roloff Lotrier, sorry if I didn't say that right. Do you listen to metal to get hyped for a race, Brent?
Yes, I listen to metal. Specifically, I probably listen to power metal the most. All right, it's got a very like almost like taking like hair metal, but adding like a Eurovision kind of vibe to it. So it's like super energetic, super funky, super fun. So like I listen to, so let's say for Tokyo, for example, I listen to a lot of Beast in Black. I still listen to them a lot when I'm in the gym. There's another band called Dynasty with a Z. Battle Beast would be another one. I just discovered another power metal band called Induction that I'm really, really digging right now.
Oh yeah, I like that. I just getting Kibasi saying with a Z, and Luke just came from London, so I'm sure he heard a lot of.
With a Z, for you Americans. With a Z, yeah, with a Z. It's Z in Canadian.
Well, you know, I grew up in high school. A lot of my I was into Zeppelin, and I listened to a lot of Rush. But
Rush is amazing.
It wasn't until a lot later that I realized that one of my favorite Rush songs and one of their most popular songs is actually YYZ, not YYZ.
Okay, just on that note, like the last, so I remember we were down in Washington State, and we pulled into grabbing coffee, and I remember like for some reason they asked for like our zip code, and I said like, well, we don't have zip codes, we have a postal code. Oh yeah, it was because something to do with the putting the credit card in, because it was asking for our zip code.
Yeah,
and so my wife was trying to say our postal code to the person. There's a Z in there, and she kept, every time we said it, she's like, sorry, what? Like, no, what letter is that? And I'm like, Zed. Oh, then I like lean in like Z. She's like, oh, okay. Like, sometimes
you forget. My first day on deck coaching in America, I remember I coached the athletes. I said, okay, we're going to do 4x3 lengths butterfly. And they stood there. I'm like, 4x3 lengths. So what are you saying, coach? What are you saying? Oh, sorry, laps. They don't say lap lengths. They say laps. See, we say lengths in the pool. You have 4 lengths in the pool.
But to me, a lap is there and back, because you completed a lap. So a lap would be 2 lengths.
Exactly. So that's how I'm in America, going. You don't say length. A fifth is not 2 lengths of the pool.
No, but if you only run halfway around a track, do you call that a lap?
Brian, John?
That's not the same thing. It's not there's not an abrupt turn, Brent.
Still, you're turning and you're circle swimming. I don't know.
And it's circle swimming the wrong side.
It does make more sense, but come on, we don't circles. Elite swimmers don't circle swim. You gotta stop that. You gotta swim straight.
Exactly.
All right. So another one from our guest, Neophyte Shara says, what's your favorite Lebanese dish?
Ooh, see, I feel like people have done their research about me, first with the metal question, now with the Lebanese, because my wife is from Lebanon and I was actually there. We were there in September and October. Probably my anik. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. It's like little lamb sausages, and they're freaking amazing. So in her hometown, I mean, she was born in Beirut, but her town of Deir El Kamar, there's this little tiny butcher down the street, and you wouldn't even know there's even a butcher there. I mean, you wouldn't even be going down the street looking for a butcher, but you know, everybody knows where this one is in that town, and he just makes the best little ma'anes. Like, I've had good ones here. We got some good Lebanese food in around Vancouver, but it's just it's never the same.
Brent, kibbe naya. You know what I'm talking about? It's raw meat that is served you in a punch.
I don't know, sorry, but Luke, you'll have to make it for us next time that we're
it's dangerous. Only go by a true Lebanese family who's made that day, because it's raw meat with oil. But
so like, I feel like you can't really do it the same in North America. Like, it's got to be made in Lebanon. Like, I've never had good raw kibbeh anywhere here. Like, I've only tried it a few times. Like, I don't know, it's just like,
trust it.
The raising of the meat there is just a little different. The processing of everything is a little bit different. So I was a little weirded out the first time I tried it, because I'm like, what is this? Literally just meat pressed on a tray with like little like fork markings in it, and just like, okay, this is kind of weird, but yeah.
Right. Does sound very amazing, but I'll have to try it at some point. Okay, this one's from intern Greg. If an actor were to play you in a movie about your life, who would you pick?
I mean, do they have to be bald?
Like, well, that's your pick. You know, which era, Brent, are we targeting?
They have to swim. They have to swim.
That's okay. Now you're making it really hard.
Yeah. Because look at a Naiad movie, you know, anyway.
Okay, I'll try to just think of somebody up really, really, really quickly here. Like, I don't know. Let's go with Let's just say Brad Pitt. Go with somebody that would be totally. Or you know what? No, let's go Daniel Radcliffe because he can play anything.
Yeah, that's right. He really shifted gears.
Well, I mean, have you seen Weird? The guy played Weird Al, right?
I did not see that, but I did grow up listening to Weird Al.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. There's another movie he did. Like, I'm honestly not a Harry Potter fan at all, so that's not why I'm saying him. But like his movie Swiss Army Man was freaking fantastic. Huh. Did you see that, John?
Yeah, I did. That was a great movie. A very odd movie. Very good movie.
Like, I loved it. My wife hated it. She's like, this is stupid. Like, this is totally stupid. Like, Daniel Radcliffe is playing a dead guy.
Yep.
Man. All right, this last one's for me. We had Milorad Kavic on the show a while back, and he was talking about his side of the story of tying Phelps in 2008. And Brent, one of my first memories of you is winning that 07 world title. And I think the announcer even says, it's Hayden! But then it's you and Filippo that tie for the win. But what Milorad was saying is that they had allegedly some data to prove that he had actually made contact with the touchpad first, but didn't hit it with enough pounds of pressure. And that was what Phelps hit it to register it with to exceed the pressure and set up timing system. Do you know who actually won that race in 07?
In my race or?
Yeah, in your race.
No, I've only ever seen the video that's currently on YouTube, and there's no angle to discern that either of us finished first. I've heard some people say that I finished first, and that's why the timer, the screen had my name pop up first, rather than at the same time, because it goes mine then Filippo. But I mean that could just be just a way of computer graphics just can't do both at the same time. So, I don't think Filippo or I have ever really questioned who actually went first. We're both quite content with us sharing that medal because it was a really special moment. And we weren't, I'm not even sure if we ever spoke before that moment. I mean, I know he was also the world champion in 05. And, but since that moment, because that's kind of locked us into swimming history kind of together as being like the first to tie for a gold medal, like, that moment, we actually became pretty good friends. So I even went to, he released a book years ago, and I was even in Milan for him, with him to celebrate that. So, I love that moment. I'm glad we tied, and rather than just me alone, because it just made it just a little bit more special, a little more memorable.
Well, you may have answered what I'm going to ask you right now, but let's see. So one of the things I love most about the ISL was skins. I love seeing they had 3 minutes to get out and go again. And it was real swimming drama. And I think it was fantastic. It was all about racing, not so much about the time and going fast. We do swim offs to get into finals if you tie for eighth. What if there was money on the line and it was $1 million for the world title and you guys had the option to, you tie the wall, all right, guys, you can share the money or in 5 minutes time, you got to swim off. And that determines the prize winner. Should we do swim offs for first place?
With only 5 minutes?
Yeah, 5 minutes?
Yeah. No, you got to do it right away. You got to get up and do it. And can you imagine a drama?
So I would say no, because I would say no, because some people, especially in sprinting, they're very pure speed, and not everybody's going to have the aerobic base to go and do a swim off. They train for that top speed, and so that's what you're getting. That's what you're getting judged on. You're not getting judged whether you can get up and go 5 minutes again, right? Yeah. So I would say just leave it. But I definitely think there's a way to get to figure out some more excitement in swimming. Like ISL was definitely in the right direction. I thought the skins was fantastic. If I was younger, back when I was, I'd be showing up in meets and doing the 50, the 100, the 200, heats and finals. I'd be doing the 4x1 free, 4x1 medley, and the 4x2 free heats and finals. So I'd be doing so much racing. If I got the chance to do skins when I was younger, I imagine I would have done really well.
Yeah, for sure.
But definitely not then, man. Didn't swim for 7 years. I'm like, and I do like the 100 or 150. I'm like, oh man, I need to rest.
You mentioned some of the fields that you had raced against. I mean, that the 09 World Champs is a loaded field with Cesar breaking the world record, Nystrand. It was and Fred and Lane 8 going out.
Yeah.
What would you say was like the most stacked 100 free final that you feel like you were in? Was it the 09 race, or do any of your other legendary races come to mind?
I mean, yeah, 09 was huge. But I mean, even looking at that that 2012 one, I think every six of the seven other swimmers had beaten me at some point. So like you had Nathan Adrian, who was the 2010 Pan Pac champion at the time. James Magnuson, who was world champion. I would actually say probably even that 07 one, because you also had Hugenband in there, right? You had Hugenband, you had Lizak, Skuman, Niethling, right? Everybody there had been a world champion or a world record holder. Cesar was even in there as well. I mean, that was younger before he had really had most of his successes. So, yeah, probably would have been that 07 one, which actually, if you look back, I mean, I feel like I'm going to kind of talk down my own medal a little bit, but the times weren't really even that fast. Right. I think probably at the time, like nobody was, because it was so early in the season. I mean, can't use that excuse now because we just had the world champs in February. Right. Yeah. And saw Pan, get that world record in the 100 free, which was incredible. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. You look at that one, like every single person other than me, it seemed like, had won an Olympic gold medal or was a world champion.
That's so wild. Yeah. One quick follow up on 2012, though, because you mentioned James Magnuson. Did you see this news about him competing in the enhanced games and like, trying to get after the 53?
Oh, man. You know what? It'll be interesting. James, obviously I got a lot of respect for the guy, and he can do what he wants. And I think it's just a fun way to kind of just see what limits you can push the body. So totally. Let him go do that. I think overall, though, the enhanced games, I personally just don't think it's a really good idea, because I think it's going to put a lot of athletes at risk. I think it's going to risk a lot of health issues, right? Because who knows how much the heart can take, who knows how much the body can take. And I think people are really going to push the limits. And I hate to see some, healthy, fit people suddenly having heart attacks and stuff. So overall, not a big fan of it, but...
Yeah, it would be nice for the a legitimate event to offer $1 million for the winner of the world record, I should say, versus they only get 30 grand for a world record, right? Only, but still.
$1 million all over the place. $1 million for everyone.
Yeah, we need to figure out how to get more money into swimming. And that's one of the things that I loved about the ISL. It was giving more opportunities for swimmers to make money. And you break a world record. That's not enough money. Get a world championship gold medal. Like that's not enough money. We got people that are coming to like eighth at Wimbledon or like some like golf tournament. They're making way more money, right? So, but those also have a broader audience for people that aren't necessarily interested in their sports. People that don't golf, watch golf. People that don't play tennis, watch tennis. So we need to broaden that audience to be able to start making some more, bringing in some more money for the swimmers.
Yeah, a big thing for swimmers too is their credibility and their hardware they have. And that's how they use that to get sponsorships and exposure. My best year in swimming was a year that a lot of athletes and my best meet kind of swam through the meet. And so I performed really, really well because I focused on that meet. And, these worlds are just finished. Athletes either skipped it or swam through it. I mean, some athletes literally just popped over the qualifier for Paris and then went back to training, the Brits and stuff. But does that devalue the fact that, Hunter Armstrong, Claire Curzon, all these athletes, is that devalue your world championships, a world championship to show up in a day? What's your thoughts on those world champions that we just had?
I mean, you can only compete against those who show up. If for whatever reason, the best one in the world might not show up at the world championships because they got injured or they got sick or something. So people not being there happens all the time. They didn't go. That was their choice. It was still a world championship. Those medals still count no matter what. I don't like this whole idea. So-and-so wasn't there. That was their choice.
Yeah.
Right. They had the choice to come and race me, for example, and they didn't. So what does that say about them?
Yep.
Right. I mean, I know at this case, it was, people are preparing for Paris, and you know, for some people that the timing of it just didn't work in with their, you know, with their training plan, and yeah. That's perfect, and that's perfectly fine. But you can only race who's there. Gold medal world champs is still a gold medal.
Mm-hmm. I think we're all in agreement about, you know, having more money for the athletes, and we all loved ISL as well. We were pretty dialed in and tuned in, but it seems like that's not coming back.
It's too bad. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, it's just unfortunate that at the start of the second season, you know, it's like COVID hit, and like suddenly they couldn't make tickets. There's the war in Ukraine. Like it was just unforeseeing the worst timing that they could have launched that thing. And you know, and yeah, so it is what it is. It's unfortunate. I know there's another league that they're trying to launch, the Premier Swimming League. So, you know, wishing them the best of luck with that, because swimmers need more opportunity for exposure, for racing, because racing is fun. And sometimes these meets are also just too few and far in between that swimming, if you're an elite athlete, can actually get very boring.
Yeah. So do you think it is just more exposure, more racing that's going to help get more eyes? Or, I mean, you've been around the sport for a long time. What other ways do you think athletes can garner more exposure and earn more money in the sport?
Yeah, like I said, I think the ISL was kind of doing the right things. Because they were making they're taking the importance of the times away, and you know, going like this whole point system and having two people in every final. In every swim. So that point system was really neat. I think if they were able to continue the ISL, we would have been able to test more formats and kind of do away with what wasn't working, and you know, do with what was working. Because you know, we can always predict what the audience wants, but we've never had an audience really to actually grab that data from to see what non-swimming fans actually want to see. Yeah, I mean, people also need to learn more about the athletes themselves. They need more backstories. They need more heroes and villains, right? Yeah. Those sort of backstories is what makes it interesting. Otherwise, it's just these people that just come up that they have no idea who they are. They've never heard of them. These names don't mean anything. So
one of the things I've been reflecting on is like, how important is it for the sport or the activity itself to be relatable to someone? Like, I mean, the adage with running is like, everybody puts on a pair of shoes and goes for a walk or goes for a run. So you can really understand what it is and put yourself in that athlete's shoes in a way. But then like Drive to Survive, like, you know, with this whole like Netflix, I just watched the NASCAR one actually, which is pretty good. But, you know, I guess a lot of people drive. So you can kind of relate to that, although not necessarily on a racetrack. But then we've also had racket sports having a moment, you know, with like the surges of pickleball. And I'm wondering, like, is there something like that for swimming? Like, what would be the pickleball version in racket sports? Like, what would that be for swimming, do you think?
Like, if you look online, there are tons of swimming communities of people that aren't competitive swimmers. You know, like, people love to just go to the pool and swim laps. You know, they join, like, you know, their local, like, you know, swim groups. You know, there's open water communities. There's also, like, Masters is a huge community around the world. So outside the world of, you know, pool competitive swimming, there's a whole community of swimmers out there. So I think they can definitely relate. One thing I often hear when I'm seeing, I get it commented even on my own videos, but people want to see somebody swimming against an average person, yeah. Like an average swimmer, and have, you know, so like in every event, let's just throw in like one average Joe in to race with the elite. So, because like, you know, like when you're watching 100 meter in track, like, you know, it's fast, right? But, and like, you could have somebody else that could be like, you know, two steps behind the gold medalist, and be like, oh man, that person's so slow, because two steps is such a huge gap, right? Like, wow, that person sucks. Like, or even in diving, like, they had like a little bit more splash on that dive, and everyone sitting here has never watched that, and they're all sitting like, oh man, yeah, that person didn't have a good entry. Like, they're all judgy. But like, if you actually look at the margin of error between first and like last place in those, like, it's so small. And then you throw in, you know, an average Joe, and realize like that person isn't even there. Like, wasn't there like a track athlete recently, like within the last like 6 months or something, that she had no reason to be there? It was like, yeah. I like some like she was like some politician's like relative that got her in or something like that. And she was like not even halfway and everybody was already done. And it's like, it was like ridiculous. But so people are saying like, throw that average Joe in there so we can actually see how good these athletes actually are and actually appreciate it a little more.
I got to be honest. I think Eric the Eel has way more views than any of your swims.
Probably. I mean, Eric the Eel, he was a hero of mine because that was like the last Olympics before I decided to start training a year round and try to qualify for my fourth one. So I remember watching that swim live. So I was think back to that. His moment, I'm going a little bit of a side note here. I think that was the moment that I realized that swimming and Olympianism really isn't just about the results and the performance. It's about the human character. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of like the first moment that I realized that. So I think that kind of helped shape me a little bit as an athlete, especially as a young athlete growing up.
Now, there's so much things that we do in a sport, we take it for granted, and you don't realize how marketable it is and how people go, wow. Like, James has a famous video of Ben and Flo just swimming really perfect, easy, you know, freestyle, and it has millions of views because, you know, people don't realize that you can actually move very slowly and gracefully through the water. And the four of us take that for granted. You know, I can very easily do it, but people are blow your mind. And you yourself, Brent, you did something recently on social media, which to me, I'm like, yeah, that was cool, but shit, it went viral. So you went to Tenerife and you put it on, you know, Spinal Tap number 11, 2.5 miles.
Like, and but why didn't this go up to 10? Because this goes to 11.
But you went all out. So you went you put it at 2.5 meters per second and you went to 10 seconds. And I was like, yeah, that looked cool, but I know Brent can swim faster than that, and he has swum faster than that when you think about it. But talk about that. The views it got was ridiculous.
I mean, like, it's so funny. Also, the videos that I always seem to do well are the ones I put the least amount of time into editing. Like, the videos I like, oh, this is like a perfect camera angle. I'm going to pick the right music and all this stuff. Like, that one is like, I don't know. I just kind of threw it up there. And it went viral. It had a few different times when it spiked in its virality. So the first time it went to like 17 million and then it went to 25 million. Then just over a week ago, it jumped over the 30 million. But yeah, like honestly, that day I'd barely been swimming. I also didn't sleep all night the night before because sometimes it's when I travel and I'm, you know, in a new bed or whatever in time zone, like, I was so tired that day, but I had the chance to just throw it on, to crank it up. Cause I just asked him like, hey, how fast does this thing go? It's like, oh, 2.5 meters per second. And I believe the world record pace, which, is like 2.3 450 free.
Yeah.
So like, can we just put it up to 2.5 just so I can just see what it looks like? Right. I've never actually seen water moving at 2.5 meters per second. And I'm looking at it like, that looks really fast. Like, okay, well, let's just try it the first time. Just with a swim brief on. And it's funny, that video also went viral. That one went up to 9 million. And I dive in and you can't see anything. Just because at that speed, there's just so much air mixed in with the water. Like you couldn't see a single thing. So I had no idea where I was in the flume. Normally, like you see that strip along the bottom that says Tenerife Top Training, and that you use that to kind of judge. I couldn't see that at all. So I'm just kicking as fast as I can and just spinning my arms, just trying to keep up with the water. And I didn't know I was done until my toe kicked the grate.
Yeah.
And then I got out and I'm like, I wonder how long I could last if I put the wetsuit on, right? Mm-hmm. The Fjord 3.0. Cause I was there working with DeBoer to do some testing with some suits that they're coming out with. Mm-hmm. And, So I threw it on. I took a 15 minute break. I had my Americano, right, and put on some metal music, put on some Beast in Black to psych myself up. And I remember just standing there on the block there, just doing a little hop in, and like my heart was just pounding, just watching that water come rushing back. Yeah, dove in, and like again, like at that speed, it's like impossible to have like absolutely perfect technique because you're just trying to keep that stroke rate up, right? Yeah. And timed the video afterwards, and I actually got pulled. I got sucked underwater right after the video clips, right? Or after the video cut. So I posted another clip of it. Because like I'm sitting there, my feet are planted on the wall and I'm just kind of like using the water to just kind of like surf a little bit. And then I kind of started to drift sideways. And then next thing I know, as soon as I had the pressure on my back and the delta pressure of the intake pipe sucking mm-hmm. out as well, it literally just sucked and pushed me underwater at the same time. And you watch the video. It looks like my head actually bounces off the metal grate. I don't recall if I actually hit my head. Maybe that's how hard I hit. But I stuck my knee out at the last second just to kind of brace myself. And I had a really hard time walking for a few days after that because my knee was super swollen and painful. But I got a great video out of it, so it was worth it.
It was so good. But honestly, you've gone fast. You've swum at 25 meters under 10 seconds before. Your split in your 50 is under that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think
if I was like training and I had actually gone into the pool and actually did a warm up, even like I literally did that cold turkey. Like the first swim video in my swimsuit was the warm up. That was my first swim of the day. So if I ever go back, I might prepare a little better. That was because like I had no idea what was actually going to happen. So it was more like let's just do it and just see rather than like an actual like prep to actually try. But that could be something where we get swimmers to come out and actually compete.
That'd be sick. Yeah.
So if you could throw any celebrity in that 2.5 meters per second, who would you throw in there?
I mean, it would have to be another swimmer. The average person would get injured so easily because as soon as they hit the water, if you don't have a perfect dive entry, like your hands are going to get thrown back and you're going to get thrown right back into that grade. Like somebody else who's not experienced could seriously get injured if they do that. So like that's why like when I dive in, I don't do like a huge jump because I'm just focusing on like I have to dive with my hands perfectly together. Cause if I'm like off angle, just slightly, that water is going to rip my hands back. And then I'm going to be stuck with my hands down by my side and just get thrown back. So it is quite nerve wracking when you're standing there. Cause in the video, you don't get a sense of the power of the water when you see it and you see it churning against the grate, because it is moving so fast and the sound of it all echoing in there. It was quite, quite surreal, but I want to do it again.
I have a question for you. So you went to we're in college season now. So NCAA conference meets in Canada too. And you went to the second best school in Canada, right?
Yeah.
So
anybody listening, Luke is flexing with his McGill University swimming shirt where he was an alum.
The Redbirds.
So I have a question about, it's now called U Sports. U Sports is the Canadian NCAA sports system. In our days, it was called CIAUs. Anyway, why?
In my day, it was CIS.
Yeah, well, CIs, which is short for CIAUs. Oh, no, I lie. It went to CIS.
Yeah, it went to CIS and then to U Sports.
You swam in Canada at university. And when I swam in university in Canada, I swam with Olympic bronze medalist Marianne Limper, Joan Millar. At my nationals, Chris Renaud set the world record in a 50 backstroke at our nationals. Curtis Maiden, a two-time Olympic medalist, was swimming in university. You know, UBC was a powerhouse where Brent went to be quite honest. Canadian university swimming did have these stars. Why isn't it not more of a attractive spot for Americans to go? A lot of Americans went there for a fifth year eligibility. You get 5 years, it's cheaper, it's cool as hell, yes, but we have coaches, we have the facilities. Why isn't U Sports more of a landing spot as opposed to the NCAAs? What do you think?
I think there's just way more hype in the NC2A. It's just more exciting. Like the meets are, there's just way more hype around it. Like, again, we talk about getting eyes on swimming. I think people that aren't necessarily interested in swimming but are interested in NC2A sports also follow that as well. Like, I mean, college sports in the States is huge. Like those stadiums, if you're looking at basketball and that, like those are real professional sports. So overall, I think it's just a whole atmosphere that's just way more attractive than what we're able to get in Canada. Like it's just the reality of it. I don't think it's not a question of the quality of the training. You can get very great training in Canada, and I think we've proven that. I think that's one reason why. At the time I stayed in Canada, even though I was being recruited by universities down in the States, because, at the time we had at UBC, we had Mike Mantenko, right? Brian Johns, Mark Johnson, Marion Limpert had trained there as well. So, and the head coach was Tom Johnson, who had been coaching at many, many Olympics. So I was like, that's where I want to go, because I wanted to not necessarily have a good college career. I wanted to have a good international career. So that was my choice at the time. Plus, it was also close to home. So
of course,
it allowed me to do that as well.
Well, I'm actually going to go up to U Sports and see U Sports the first time in a couple of weeks, and I'm really excited for that. But I'm going to go to these meets now, having gone to several NC2As, watching it and being around American swimming for a long time, and realize that I think one of the powers of American powerhouse is the NCAA system. It's what it really is. Don't you think that, but the Canadian swimming has really blossomed on both sides, on the men and on women's side, obviously recently. Are the two not linked, that you have to have a strong university system to produce, besides strong age group system, or not? I mean, the Canadians have topped the world for the women, but none of those women compete in university swimming that we know of, right? But they've blown up. Is it not the two linked? I always thought NCAA system's reason the Americans are so good, but is it more than that?
To be honest, I probably haven't really thought long and hard enough about this one to really give an
educated. You went to UBC, see McGill. That's the difference, right?
Yeah. So, I'm teasing. I will say, I feel like back in my day, when we did see Canadians go down to the NC2A system, they kind of got lost in the system down there, because they were also training for yards, really, really short sprints, and then they'd go and try and compete long course, and there was no they weren't able to transfer over. So swimmers were going down, they're doing well in NC2As, and they come in to Olympic trials and they just wouldn't really do anything. But now, we are seeing Canadian swimmers actually being very successful in NC2A and coming up and doing really well. I mean, we just saw Josh Liendo post like that amazing time that was a 100 fly the other day. So it's been really exciting to see how being down in the NC2A system and training with really pure sprinters well has also helped. I guess that's another thing too, though, about the NC2A is that they also have more depth. Whereas in Canada, you can be kind of a big fish in a small pond, there's a bit of a fall off from, the top swimmers. And there's there's a bit of a gap down in the States. There's just, everybody's just kind of closer together. So it kind of pushes the swimmers a little bit more.
You mentioned a few of the Canadian swimmers coming up. I mean, Canada in swimming really seems to be having a renaissance right now with a lot of big name elite swimmers. Who are you most excited to watch from Team Canada at Paris?
I mean, I'm going to be cheering for my boy, Josh Liendo, because we swam that relay together in Tokyo, and it was a really incredible experience. Because I went first and he was second, I feel like me touching the wall and having Josh dive in was a little bit of that sort of passing of the torch moment. So, and I've gotten to know his parents really well as well. So definitely will be cheering for him. He wasn't at the World Champs, so I'm really curious to see what he's going to do. Obviously, his swim in the NC2A also is boating pretty well. But let's talk about Finley Knox, who just won the gold medal from lane 7. Not expected to get a medal. I think from the heat swim or the semifinal swim that I had watched, his breaststroke was kind of like the weak leg. So I was kind of waiting to see what is he going to do on the breaststroke, but he turned into the freestyle, right in that, metal position. And he just drove it home. So, again, I've gotten to know his parents, pretty good. They're great. So yeah, those two guys right there are the two that I'll be watching for sure. I mean, I'm going to be watching everybody, but if I had to pick two, it's them.
Side note, Josh started swimming in Trinidad, Trinidadian heritage, that's, you know, never Canadian.
Yeah.
Anyway, go back, John. I got to big up where I'm from always, Brent, you know.
Yeah, that's fine. Love it.
So you mentioned some on the guys' side, but obviously there's a lot of great Canadian female swimmers too. And maybe contending on the relays. Not that I think, yeah, you were focused on the men. We have them as well.
Well, but, come on, Summer McIntosh.
Yeah, there you go.
Come on. Everybody's gonna be watching her. Like it's gonna be absolutely incredible. Like she's still so young too. Like I remember we were at a staging camp in Vancouver before heading over to Tokyo, and I was we're just doing this end of a warm-up session, and it was like a set of 50s, but you know, it was like pretty strong 50s, and I push off, and like I'm pushing myself pretty hard, and I look over and she's right there. And like I've never had I think she was 15 at the time, like a 15-year-old girl, like right there with me when I'm actually like trying. Right. Yeah. I'm like, holy, like she really is an incredible swimmer. Yeah. Gonna probably make some history, but don't want to put any pressure on her. I think she should just go out there and just focus on her race, and the results will take care of themselves.
What do you think has led to this rise in the young Canadian swimmers? And then one other quick follow-up, do you think that women's medley relay, 400 medley, has a chance to medal?
Yeah, I mean, we got to give a lot of credit to Ben Titley. When he came to Canada, he really revolutionized Canadian swimming, and I think he's responsible for the program out in Ontario. So many swimmers came up through him, like from really young to like growing them up onto the national team and getting them to the podiums. In Tokyo, I think he won more Olympic medals as a coach than any other coach in Canadian history. And I think he did that in one Olympics. Mm-hmm. If that stat's correct. So you guys can put a footnote there to correct me on that. So I was sad to see that he wasn't going to be sticking around, but I think he's left a legacy, obviously. And then when you see your swimmers, like your own countrymates, doing something incredible, that unlocks this belief in everybody else who's younger and who's watching you and who's being inspired by you. So even though like Ben's not here, the swimmers are still swimming. They've inspired swimmers, that are up and coming, all across the country. So, and it's gotten swimmers to this point where they're not just thinking about, I'd like to make the national team. I'd love to, go to the Olympics. They're now thinking like, okay, you know what? Even if I'm from a small town that doesn't really have a history of, producing anybody, I'm not just thinking about going to the Olympics. I want to go to the Olympics and win. Like I want to win medals. I want to be up there seeing, because I see swimmers now standing on the podium wearing their Canadian track jacket, right, watching the Canadian flag go up. That is, having that belief is so much different than just thinking like, I just want to make the team. So I think they've done that.
I love that. Brent, you took time off the sport and you came back, and in that time off the sport evolved and changed. You always known as, from my memory, you didn't wear a swim cap. You didn't wear, you were Speedo Laser in 09. Everybody else wore J-Kids. You stepped away. You came back, and all of a sudden people are doing underwaters like crazy. And some rules have changed, and you had to adapt to that. And you had to adapt how you swam your 53, because that's what you went. And you swam the fastest times of your life. How had the sport evolved and you had adapted, and what did you focus on to succeed?
Yeah, if you look at my technique changed quite a bit. If you look at the 100 free final in London versus my time even leading off the relay, I know I went to 47.99 versus 47.85 that I did in London. But I mean, I think if I had the fitness I had in London with the technique I had in Tokyo, that my Tokyo time actually would have been faster. Wow. Definitely opened my arms up a lot more, because back when I was growing up, I'm in product of the 80s and the 90s, it was very high elbow driven in the recovery. Mm-hmm. I still hear people talking about, you got to have your elbow up really high, but for me that was just ruining my shoulders. I was in physio like every week when I was already like 12-13 years old. I almost had to stop swimming because I ruined my shoulders were getting ruined, right? Zipper drill like endless, right? Mm-hmm. So I've done things where, I've taken zipper drill out of my repertoire. I don't do that anymore. I put more focus on how my shoulder is rotating, right? Keep that shoulder neutral, because as soon as I lift that elbow, that shoulder loves to ride up, or you shrug, you overuse your traps. So, and so I guess after I retired in London, I was teaching a lot. And when I was teaching in person, all the swimmers I was getting were all coming to me with shoulder problems. And what was like the one common thing they were all doing? They were all overly emphasizing this high elbow position, trying to keep that hand close to the body. And I'm thinking, like, I'm looking at all the other swimmers, like the fastest swimmers in the world, and it doesn't matter if they're swimming, you know, 50 meter free, which is like, you know, almost straight arm. If they're swimming like a 1500 free, they're all taking much wider, wider recoveries in relation to the hand to the body. So I started coming up with a sort of not a high elbow, not a straight arm, something in between. I started calling it a open arm recovery, which puts more emphasis on, again, the shoulder position and the rotation to get to actually clear the water. So whether you're here or here, right, letting that forearm relax, the shoulder position remains the same. The only other thing that changes is just when you pull your catch relative to where your arm is in the recovery, right? Mm-hmm. It'll be later for long distance, earlier for sprinting. And because I was teaching that all the time, and, you know, through the course of the system that my wife and I created, that could essentially take any swimmer and basically go back to like their default settings and build them back up. Yeah. Going through their alignment, their rotation, right, their kick and everything. I was essentially reteaching myself how to swim and becoming even more meticulous with the details of my swimming. Because, like, I go back now and I watch the videos of my swims, like whether, you know, the first time I swam sub 48 without a bodysuit at the 2010 Commonwealth Games, I'm looking at my head position, like, why is my head so far forward? Like, why am I, like, I'm literally like looking forward. How much drag is that creating? I'll even look at the London one, I'm thinking, like, I could probably have opened my arms up a bit more. I mean, we saw how Nathan actually did that drive in the last 15 meters because he opened up his arms into the last 15 meters. Even my head was still too high. Like, I don't know if that would have made up the difference to change my medal position, but I probably would have moved further away from fourth place at least a little bit. Mm-hmm. So when I was teaching these other people, I was also teaching myself. And then in 2019, I decided to actually film my program, this program that my wife and I created. And I was essentially like going through the step-by-step system that I'm going to be teaching other people online. And that's when I was like, wow, my stroke feels better, even though I haven't swam. So let's see what this new technique can actually do. So I was, comparatively to my old ones, my alignment was better. I had better T-spine rotation. I was on that hot dog stick that my coach told me when I was like six years old. So I still got that, but it's better. And I started opening up the arms even more. And like, I'm doing times I'm close to times that I'd be doing when I was feeling like when I was feeling pretty fast. So, So, and then of course watching other swimmers, like, yeah, let's put this to the test, because the last thing I want to be doing is Tokyo goes by and I'm sitting there at home going, well, what if?
Is this business that you started with your wife, is that taking your full attention right now? What's give us kind of the update on what a normal day in the life looks like for you?
Yeah, so like so that was our original course. It was we called it Swimming Secrets, like swimmingsecrets.com. That's still going, but we've been building on more one-on-one programs. So a few weeks ago, I launched my first. I've been doing, I should say before I did that, I've been doing video analysis on an app called Skillist. So there, I know, like, I'm on there, Kyle Chalmers, Ryan Murphy, Abby Weitzel. There's a few other swimmers that are on there. So swimmers can actually log on and actually get video analysis by, you know, one of their favorite swimmers. All right. So that's pretty cool. So, because I had already been doing, giving like tips and sort of like a feedback to the people who bought the course. So they joined my private Facebook group, they upload videos, I'd go in there and give tips. But now I'm doing like an actual recording and analysis with voiceover and using all the tools. Now I've taken it a step further and I've created another coaching program. So It's more personalized, where people upload a video. We do like an in-depth discovery of finding all everything that's wrong. And then I will actually structure a program to actually make all the fixes. And then we build the workouts and everything on top of that to reinforce and unlock speed. And I've been doing that now for 3 weeks. I actually did a call out looking only for five people, but the response was absolutely huge. We got 9 people in the program, and I had to stop at 9 because every week, like I actually can't handle more than that right now. Cause like I'm literally sitting here on my computer all afternoon, going over with them, on Zoom and doing analysis on my iPad with them. And then I spend the rest of the evening crafting their dry land activation things to reinforce the thing they're looking for, and then giving them the steps they want to do for the next week. So going to probably take this beta program and relaunch it again as a new kind of like completed package. And I'm literally coaching all day, almost every day, virtually. And it's been fun because I get to coach people all around the world.
What a sport. Yeah. Thanks to you, man. It's awesome.
Yeah, Luke's thank you. Super
interested because he needs the help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know,
because some of the swimmers I'm working with, like I've got age, like all age. I've got young competitive swimmers. I've got triathletes. I've got an Ironman. I've got even just just people who just want to just learn how to swim better, just for their own health. Especially swimming is so good, especially as you're older, because it's low impact and it's full body. So everybody actually needs to be swimming, but. But the young competitive swimmers is something like, because I also always, I'm always thinking of the swimmer first. And the last thing I want to be doing is creating, confusion between what I'm teaching versus what their coach is teaching. Because the last thing you want to do is have that confused swimmer. Totally. So everybody that wanted to join the program, I always said, like, go get permission from your coach first. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want you doing this secretly behind your coach's back. So we need your coach's blessing. And then we can even do Zoom calls with your coach on if they ever want to actually see, because a lot of times I might even be teaching the same thing, I'm just saying it in a different way as well. And also we can come to figure out like what's actually best for the swimmer as well. But as a swimmer yesterday, her mom texted me saying that she just did absolutely incredible in this meet, because her confidence was shaken. And we started off actually with her mindset. We haven't even really gone into the technique stuff yet. So just changing her mindset unlocks some belief in her. And so I got that. I had a swimmer who normally goes like push 25s in practice. He pushed a 20, I think it was like a 23 high after only our first session, just by identifying everything. So everybody that's done the program, even like after the first session or the first two sessions, are already experiencing like huge improvements.
Hell yeah. All right. Luke's signing up after those for sure.
For breaststroke tips.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I might not have been a breaststroker, but I can still teach it.
For real. Okay, good.
All right. Brent, we got a few rapid fire questions to finish up.
All right, shoot.
What's the hardest race in swimming?
100 free.
Oh yeah. Olympic gold or world record?
You know what? I would have to say Olympic gold, because world records can be broken. When you have that Olympic gold, that's never taken away from you.
All right. Do you pee in the pool?
Yes. If you say no, you're lying. Like 100%. Because here's the thing. It's not that you, it's not like peeing in a pool is a thing and you just have to do it. Like you're in the middle of a hard set and you're thinking, okay, I got X amount of time left in this set, like, or number of meters. And you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, like I'm training to win an Olympic gold medal. Am I going to get out of the pool just to go to the bathroom and come back in and like lose the flow of the set and try to get back into it, or mess up the timing of the lane to make it for what I missed? Cause now everybody else is onto something different, or might have to just skip it to join in where everybody else is. I'm thinking to myself, like, do I want to risk not training at my best to win an Olympic gold medal, or am I going to go pee?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. That's literally the choice. It's right, because getting out and going to the washroom will literally jeopardize everything you're trying to do. So it's
yep.
Like if it's an easy set or it's like it's warm down because you dive in the cold pool and suddenly it makes your bladder have to go, then yeah, sure, I'll get out and go. But if I'm in the middle of a hard set and I'm thinking like about my goals, no, I am not getting out. I'm going to keep training.
You hear that, everybody? Brent Hayden said it first. If you're not peeing in the pool, you're not serious.
Oh, don't worry. I'm not the first person that's ever said that. So I'm not like,
said it. All right. Which Olympic sport would you be best at besides swimming?
I think I could be pretty good at skeleton.
Hell yeah. All right. What's your biggest gym flex? What's the most impressive thing you can do in the gym that people are like, holy, what do you do?
I mean, I honestly don't think I'm that impressive in the gym. I think like I maybe be able to, I'm working my deadlift back up to 300 right now. Like I got up to, I think 315 when I was training for Tokyo, and I kind of stopped that for a while. So I've been slowly building that back, building my bench back up as well. But again, I'm still not at two plates. I think the most I ever benched was like 230.
All right.
Maybe 235. So I'm trying to get back out there. I did do a few pull-ups, did three pull-ups with 90 pounds nice. A couple weeks ago, which is the strongest I've ever been on that. But I don't know. Is that impressive? I actually don't know.
I mean, average people can't do it. That's for sure.
No, but I mean, keep in mind, I guess like I am 40 now, but I do follow Nick Santos. I see what he's still doing in the gym. I'm like, okay, so I can still do this. So yeah, he inspires me to stay fit.
Dude, I trained with him for a year when he came to Auburn, and that guy was so explosive. I mean, talk about explosive power. No one.
Oh, I know he moves that weight so fast, and I'm like, okay, if I tried to move weight that fast, I would hurt myself.
Yeah.
So everything I do is like very, very symmetrical. Like I don't do cleans. I don't do Olympic lifting and don't do anything like that. I'm very like, all right, planes of motion, right? You know, I'll do functional stuff much lighter. But I feel like, I just with my joints, like, I don't know. I don't trust myself throwing weights around that quickly.
All right. Who's had the best freestyle that you've ever seen?
I mean, other than me?
Yeah.
Of course, man. Of course.
I mean, gotta give it to McAvoy. I mean, the guy is, I don't remember, like, I think Mel Stewart called me a professor of freestyle, but I think they also called him the professor of freestyle. I think he's got that dialed in as well. He would do what I would call it is that open arm freestyle that that I coined, because it's not high elbow, it's not straight arm, it's kind of in that optimal zone. So I really like that. If we want to talk about his 50 free at the World Champs when Bukov came up from the back, I mean, you know, I'd have to look at Bukov's freestyle closer, because I'll be honest I wasn't watching him, but definitely gonna be watching him now. Cam, this is just my opinion. But I actually do think Cam knows a lot more about freestyle than I do from a physiological perspective. I'm very simple. Mm-hmm. He shortened his stroke in the last four strokes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Right. You can see he got off his stroke rate to try to pick it up. And I think that actually slowed him down. I think if he had just maintained that, I think he actually would have out-touched Bukov.
Yeah, actually, I remember Brett posted that video on his Instagram and said, "What do you see of the race?" And my comment on that thread was from our social media account was, "Cam, last four strokes, oof."
Yeah. I feel like, you know, it's something that you see a lot in swimming. When somebody comes up on the finish, they all of a sudden, like, you see them in your peripheral, and you just get that little voice in the back of your head that just makes you kind of change something. And you're like, oh, got to get going again. And so who knows what was going on underwater. But one thing I always say to swimmers is never sacrifice your stroke length for stroke rate. It's not about how fast you get your arm over, it's about how quickly you move that water back. I mean, obviously the two are related, but like, you're not going to go faster just by putting smaller tires on a car.
Yeah, for sure. All right. This one's from our follower, Kaihu Han Wolf. What's the winning time in Paris in the 50 free?
Oof. It's got to be a 20 point.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, I mean, like we're seeing I don't even think Cam was, I'll be honest, I don't think Cam was at his best at these world champs. He's obviously going to learn from the finish. Like, I think he knows everything that went wrong. I think there's probably things in his stroke that he knows that even we don't, because he was the one that was actually in the race. He could feel things that we don't see. And he gotta think he's going to be also in better shape then. He's gonna be better tapered. You know, I think he's also put on a lot of weight for his training, because he's been getting his strength up. So if he leans out a little bit in that taper as well while maintaining that strength, yeah, I think he's going to be pushing that. Right. And then, you're gonna throw a Dressel in there as well. Manadu's gonna be in there. We'll see if Bruno's around. Yeah, it's gonna be fast. I think people are gonna have to probably break a world record or get close to it.
Alexi. Yeah.
All right, might as well do the 100 too. What are the chances that there's 346s make up the podium in the 100?
I think there's gonna be 346s. I wouldn't be surprised if there was four.
Wow.
Right? Like we might see somebody have a breakthrough like Bukov did, who we don't even know about, right? That's what happens at the Olympics. Somebody else is going to show up. So, but I mean, are we going to see the world record get broken in the final? Mm. Who knows? Because it really seems lately that the 100 meter freestyle, the faster times are when there's less pressure.
Yeah.
Right. There's less on the line and everybody's feeling freer to perform, and they're focusing on the performance, and then they get to the final and now they're thinking about the results and they change their strategy. So, I think that's probably something that happened with Pan in the final. He was freer to focus on his performance in the relay, and then he was thinking about the results in the final, and he didn't quite get there. I mean, he still won the gold medal. It's still not downplaying that at all, but it was such a huge drop in performance compared to what we know he's capable of. So,
Brent, do you go out for like Pan, or do you come back like Popovic?
I mean, it depends on what year we're talking about, right? What I mean, because like for when I went the silver medal in 2011 at the World Champs, I was sixth at the wall and then came back and won the silver. And then when I won the bronze in London, I was second. I was only 1/100th behind Caesar. And then I came back for third. So I don't really know which Brent would really be showing up. It seemed to have been a little bit of both, maybe.
Okay.
All right. Well, we got to know, how often are you doing social kick nowadays?
Oh, I'm barely swimming these days. Cause I discovered because of COVID, when they closed the pools down and I had to find ways to keep swimming, I just found I really love open water swimming. Hmm. Right. I love getting out into nature. Just like when I do open water swimming, I don't even track my swim. Like, I don't care. Like, people are always asking me, like, what's your open water pace? So I'm like, I don't know. Like, that's not what I'm out there for. I'm out there just to connect with nature and just like, you know, just be out there. I literally will stop in the middle of the lake just to take in the view. But now that it's been too cold to do that, I just haven't been going to the pool, because something about going to the pool when it's not like with your team, and it's I feel like Canada doesn't prioritize lap swimming at the pools. It's always like, if you want some laps, it's like, we got three lanes open from 6 to 8, and then you don't have lap swimming again until like 7 to 9 at night, and like the rest of it's all like, you know. Like, yes, you got to have lessons and aqua aerobics and all that stuff, but there's just never a priority. Like, it's so hard to find a pool where you can actually swim laps. Yeah. So the timing never works. And when I do go, it's crowded. So I'm constantly just trying to get around people and also not to get in their way, because I don't want to disrupt them. So I also try not to sprint, because I don't want to be that annoying sprinter. And like, sometimes I just want to, but I can't. Right. So, and then it's just... It's loud. It can be obnoxious. So it just, I don't enjoy swimming during those times. So it's like, this has been kind of been waiting for the weather to kind of warm up again. But in a couple of weeks, I'm planning to go for a swim with a buddy of mine who was the triathlete gold medalist at the Sydney Olympics, Simon Whitfield.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah, so we've been chatting. I'm going to head over to the island and go for an open water swim with him soon. And we're going to film it and try to create some cool content with that.
Hell yeah, sweet. All right, well, Brent, remind our listeners where they can reach you and book some of this expertise that you're putting out into the world.
Yeah, you can follow me on all my social medias, like whether it's Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok. It's the Brent Hayden. TikTok might actually be Brent Hayden. I don't even know. I'm not on TikTok that often, but mostly I'm on Instagram at the Brent Hayden. And yeah, if you ever want to get coached by me, you can just shoot me a message. Or if you want to join my my course and just do it, follow it yourself step by step, at swimmingsecrets.com.
Love it. Thanks so much for hanging out with us, dude. It's been a real pleasure. And, you know, it was foundational for me. My first international meet was in 2006. Or 07 World University Games. And that was right when you were at the top of the world. So you were like one of those people that I was looking at going, okay, how do you get better? How do you continue to reach for the top? So thanks so much for that for me personally, and appreciate the time today. It's a real pleasure for us. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks guys for having me so much. This was fun.
That's it for this episode of Social Kick. We'll see you next time.
See you guys.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you're enjoying Social Kick, tell your friends about it. And be sure to tell us what you liked by leaving a comment and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Social Kick. And you can find all of our content on our website at thesocialkick.com.